Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing late on Tuesday evening, might even be Wednesday morning, I don't know. Joining us from New York City, where he attended the Pelicans' victory over the New York Knickerbockers on Tuesday night. Pelicans coming off the schneid a little bit after a winning streak and beating the battered Knicks is Tim Bontemps.
Fellas, I got a big dose of James Williams Monday night here in New York, the Garden, at the Pistons-Knicks game, and then got a whole other dose of James Williams in the pod bowl between the Cavs and Mavs tonight.
Well, joining us from Dallas, Texas, where I'll bet there's some disappointed Mavs fans, angry Mavs fans. I'm not sure what, but that's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Those Mavericks fans are always disappointed and angry in me, at least. But, hell, Max Strus broke some hearts. Gucci Mane drew some wrath. Tell you what, James Williams, a.k.a. Gucci Mane, guarantee you this. He doesn't measure up to 6 feet.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Here we go. Right off the top.
Oh, my God. Well, all right. Well, so tonight, Tuesday night, the Cavs and the Mavs played one of the better games of the NBA season, probably top for 1%. The Cavs were down by 10 points. I guess the Mavs ahead by 10 points. I tend to talk things from the Cavs angle. Sorry. The Mavs are ahead by 10 points with what, about 3 minutes left?
That's why they're giving you a bobblehead in Akron, baby.
That's right.
Well, not everybody in the Cavs organization was happy with me today, some of the stuff I was talking about, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Ooh.
But anyway, 10-point game with what, like 3-4 minutes left, McMahon?
Yeah, 10-point game with just under 4 minutes left. Max Strus hits his first of 5 threes in the last 3:42. That's followed up immediately by Tim Hardaway passing the ball to Kyrie Irving. The problem was Hardaway was inbounding the ball, and Kyrie was coming inbound the ball, so it ended up being a turnover. Literally, Strus three, that turnover, Strus three 6 seconds later, and then it got wild.
Oh man,
down the stretch in that last minute.
Classic crazy NBA game. Max Strus made what are we saying, a 55, 60 footer?
They called it it's officially 59 a 59 footer. And according to ESPN stats and info, that is the second longest game-winning buzzer beater of the three-point era.
Wow.
You might recall Devontae Graham hit that 61-foot bank shot in Oklahoma City. He was still on the Pelicans. That's the only one that's been longer.
Well, speaking of banks, the Cavs, I believe, made their last 7 three-pointers in this game. Strus made 5 of them. Donovan Mitchell banked in a three-pointer in the final minute. There was a mildly controversial non-call where I don't know. Was it Hardaway in the corner who kind of got mugged?
No, that was Josh Green right after Hardaway was pulled. Hardaway was pulled right after Max Strus hit his 4-3 in a span of, like, I don't know, 80 seconds.
Yeah.
It was.
Draw your own conclusions there. They were attacking the Hardaway-Luka duo.
Exactly. Yeah. 67 seconds. 4 threes and 67 seconds. That's pretty good.
And Strus had not cooled off about 2 minutes of game time later. It was like, you know, the NBA jam. He's on fire. And you could shoot it from half court. He was still in that mode with the game on the line.
Well,
like, when he let it go, it looked good the whole time.
Well, 59-footer, nothing but net is pretty good.
Yeah. So anyway, there was a non-call on a 3-point shot in the corner on Josh Green that Luka did not agree with. I will say this.
It looked like a mugging.
Luka got back. It was definitely a call where Luka could have lost his mind. He got back. He had commentary for the officials, but he got back.
He got back and he did not get his second tee of the game, which would have been his 14th tee of the season. I'll be curious to see if this one holds up. It was not a sub 6 footer. It was, Carl, help me out with the name.
Yeah, Carl Lane. Who's
Carl,
like,
Lane, 77 on 77 crime, teed him up.
Oh,
yeah. But so Luka got back on that. But then it comes down to, like you said, there was 23.8 seconds left. And I'm sitting there going, are the Mavericks going to foul? Are the Mavericks going to foul?
Yeah. So the Mavericks are down by 3. They elect to go for a 2-pointer.
Right.
And Kyrie went a nice basket. And by the way, let me just say as a quick aside, I thought Kyrie and Luka looked awesome in this game. Dude. The Mavericks, I think, had 4 or 5 turnovers as a team. Luka was awesome. Luka and Kyrie, both with big-time shot-making in the fourth quarter of this game down the stretch. I know they had a bad loss to the Pacers that snapped their winning streak the other night, McMahon. But I'm watching this game going, damn, the Mavericks look great.
I mean, that duo had 75 points on 53 shots, and they did commit 4 of the 5 turnovers, but only, you know, when you get 75 points, 17 assists, and 4 turnovers out of a duo, man, whew. And honestly, like, it's not like some shocking thing that they scored 75 points. They're good. They're good for,
I know, man. Like, this is one of those situations. 65,
70 on a nightly basis.
We'll go over this last sequence for a minute, but I was extremely impressed with the Mavericks in the way this game, they played this game. They just didn't close, which obviously you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressive showing by the Mavericks in a loss. I mean,
this game like soon is going to be beating the 96 the Bulls way we're going.
Well, I know. Yeah. I thought you were going to tease me about the most competitive sweep.
Well, yes,
Max Strus ain't on the 96 Bulls, so I like the Mavs odds.
But anyway, so the Mavs are down by 3. There's 30 seconds left after Donovan Mitchell banks in a 3. I was explaining to my 6-year-old, we were watching the game, and I was explaining to him the concept of the 2-for-1.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure he quite grasped it. But so Kyrie scores and just doesn't beat. There's under 24 seconds, so the Mavs have to foul. And as you said, McMahon, they didn't immediately foul. They tried to trap, and next thing you know, we've got a potential loose ball foul. It's either a loose ball foul or a travel.
It was one or the other, and Gucci James Mane Williams. And crew, yeah, Gucci Mane and crew went with none of the above. It's like, no, James, dude, it's multiple choice, and that's not on the list.
Right. James Williams, who was the lead official the night before, Monday night in Madison Square Garden, where Dante DiVincenzo tackled Asar Thompson.
A true form tackle. Would have looked good at the combine in Indianapolis this week.
And James Williams, who is the crew chief, Bontemps, James Williams is standing 2 feet from the play.
Where's the New York media now? That's
there was an incredible picture in my old publication, the New York Post, that had James Williams literally staring with the whistle in his mouth
so bad
at Asar Thompson laying on the ground next to Don DiVincenzo.
Still not my favorite James Williams moment. That had to be when he took the Jazz Bears four-wheeler for a spin around the court while the Jazz were down like 73 points between quarters last year.
That former podcast of ours wasn't too thrilled about that moment.
Real quick, James Williams, who is regarded as a good official, he is a lead, he is a crew chief. I almost thought that moment last year was like planned, but it was at the end of the season.
Nobody
right?
informed the Jazz of it.
Yeah, well, the Jazz were getting blown out, and he got on the little quad mini ATV that and drove it around the court.
One of the stranger things I've seen. With the call last night is one of the stranger no calls I've seen. And I just watched this this play with 9.2 seconds a couple of times. And Darius Garland got thrown to the ground. And there either needed to be a foul or a trap. No, I'm just saying, like, he went to the ground with the ball. There either needed to be a foul or a trap.
Yeah. Now, I will say about that.
He came off the ground and landed on the ground again. And it was no call of anything.
I just want to clarify one thing. Like you said, it was a mini ATV because the big rigs, he can't reach the gas pedals on.
I am telling you, you are one of these days.
Someone's going to bite my kneecaps.
Anyway,
go on.
Everyone is just getting a glimpse through this referee bit that McMahon is doing of just what it's like to just be around McMahon on a daily basis. It's just always like this all the time. Now everybody knows.
But you know what, though? James Williams and crew got bailed out because it's like, was it a foul? Was it a walk? It was neither. Okay. And, you know, the Mavericks are all upset, whatever. And then the Cavs botched the inbounds play.
Yeah, they turned it over.
Evan Mobley gets knocked off of Darius Garland.
Not a great pass from Evan Mobley.
I think Mobley then deflected the inbounds pass to Luka.
Yes. So now there's 9 seconds left. The Mavericks call timeout. Everybody's out of timeouts now. There's 9 seconds left. The Mavericks are now down by 1. The Mavs are inbounding the ball to Luka. JB Bickerstaff puts in a big lineup, takes out both Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. That's going to be important in a second.
Ooh. Donovan Mitchell on the sidelines as the ball is being inbounded, doing the sign of the cross, I thought it was a funny shot that they caught.
Well, Jamie Bickerstaff agrees with McMahon. He doesn't want anybody out there less than 6'5". And so Evan Mobley deflects the inbounds pass, but Luka tracks it down. So Evan Mobley makes a really good play. Doesn't result in the turnover, but almost wins the Cavs the game.
Yeah, Coro goes for the steal. Luka tracks it down. Next thing you know, he's bolting into the lane.
Luka is going into the lane, and you're thinking, this guy's going to score. And the Cavs collapse on Luka, and Luka, as cool as a cucumber, not even an issue, dumps it off to P.J. Washington, who's open, wide open under the basket. And Jared
makes a
Allen,
nice finish in traffic.
Jared yeah. Allen makes a brilliant recovery from coming out to help on Luka to go back, and I think he puts his hand on the ball.
Oh, Mavs fan said that he put his hand on the arm.
Oh, well, maybe he did.
Oh, I'm just
either way, it was a heck of a finish by PJ Washington. All of a sudden, yeah. Looked like he had a dunk, and then it was like he had to finish
great
around
finish.
Some traffic.
And, so,
and it was the finishing touches on it's Slovenian night in right. Cleveland, and here yep. Luka is on his last night as a 24-year-old, 45 points, 9 rebounds, 14 assists, a few steals, just a total masterpiece performance.
It
the
was.
Finishing touches. The game-winning assist. Oh, but it was not the game-winning assist.
So there's 2-point-something seconds left.
2.6.
2.1.
Oh,
2.1.
The Cavs have no timeouts, and they have no guard on the court. I guess they had Caris LeVert. He was on the court, but they did not have Garland.
Max has played a lot of shooting guard. He likes to shoot. He's on the court.
He was doing awfully well down the stretch.
They ran the only thing that they could. Now, I will say this. JB didn't have one of his ball handling scorers on the court, but he did have a play called.
Yeah.
So I'll give him that. JB Bickerstaff had a play called, which was a hook and ladder. Strus inbounded it to Evan Mobley, and Evan Mobley just lateraled it back to him. Strus immediately chased the ball after he inbounded it. It was reminiscent of the play that Boise State ran against Oklahoma.
I don't think that's what you meant.
They threw it over the middle.
Didn't you mean the Bryce Drew shot? That was what it was.
Well, on the Valparaiso shot, they threw it 3/4 of the way down the court. This was like in midfield.
Well, I guess.
And Matt
ran the hook and ladder.
And Strus threw it in from 59 feet, breaking the Mavericks' hearts. There was a couple of unbelievable. The ball goes in the basket right in front of the Mavericks bench. And as the camera zooms in, as you see the ball go through the basket, it's perfectly framed with some of the Mavericks players.
Absolute like swish in 59 feet too. Didn't even graze the rim. Yeah.
And I think it was Markieff Morris who had like the incredible one where you see like, it looks this pain on his face as it goes through the net. But so obviously, crazy sequence to end the game. Last 2-minute report is going to be a mess. The folks in the league office who deal with the last 2-minute reports and the referee evaluations are having a very rough time right now. This is going to be another rough last 2-minute report. But so that game, you know, for the Cavs who've been struggling, they lost 3 out of the last 5. We'll talk about that in a second. And every one of these games from now till the rest of the season with in the West is like, huge consequences. The Mavericks go from 5th to 8th by losing. So
that could end up being a hugely consequential loss.
They went 5th to 8th on Sunday, and then they just fell a little bit further back in 8th tonight.
Oh, right. That's right. They lost on Sunday.
They are half game back of the Kings, full game back of the Suns, who they do have the tiebreaker on, and now a game and a half behind the Pelicans, who are sitting there in 5th. And look, the Mavericks just had a 7-game winning streak. This obviously was a crazy game. Luka and Kyrie are efficiently just lighting it up. Honestly, I'm not going to really worry too much about other guys' offensive numbers. If Luka and Kyrie are putting up 75, P.J. Washington did make some plays there down the stretch. The defense is not been a good trip for that revamped Dallas defense. And it's interesting. They consistently are closing with Maxi Kleber at center, which again isn't necessarily shocking if you go back and look at the team that went on the West Finals run. But when the best personnel move that you've made since the Luka draft was drafting Derek Lively II, And then you gave up a future pick swap to a team that's going to be really good then to get Daniel Gafford.
Well, you traded first for him, right?
Yeah, but they traded a pick swap to Oklahoma City.
Oh, that's right. To get the first. Right. That's right. Right.
And so, you know, Daniel Gafford tonight played 7 minutes. It's expensive insurance if that's what ultimately he ends up being. PJ Washington, his offensive numbers haven't been great. He has fit very well. He does make them longer, more athletic, a little bit more dynamic because he can put it on the floor. And we'll see. We'll see how the defense isn't as good as it was during a 7-game win streak when it was at like a league best level. They better hope it's not as bad as it's been these last couple of games. Obviously, you know, the Pacers make a lot of defenses look bad, and then the Cavs just, like you said, Winnie, they hit their last 7 threes.
Well, and yeah, by the way, just real quick on the schedule, we're talking more Dallas is at. Tough back-to-back in Toronto Wednesday night against a rested Raptors team that's just won 3 in a row, just pounded Indiana on Monday.
And I assume had a big pizza party tonight.
Yeah, Darko Rajakovic had said he was going to buy the team dinner if they won 3 in a row, which they finally did for the first time by beating Indiana Monday.
Then Do you think that NBA players appreciate getting free food?
Yes.
Do you think that's a they pretty much live in a world where they swim in free gear and free food.
I'm sure they were happy to make their coach pay for food.
Free food is always good.
Dallas then is in Boston Friday. Not exactly an easy game.
Hold on.
Turn around and play at home Sunday afternoon against Philly. Philly's obviously been scuffling. Then they have Indiana and Miami. That's a pretty tough week. You know,
listen, you're leaving out a key event. You've got this back-to-back against Toronto.
Yeah.
Then Luca's birthday party. He turns 25 while they're in Toronto, which is a city where good times have been had by NBA players in the past.
That's true.
It's certainly within the realm of possibilities. So you've got the back-to-back birthday party, a day of recovery, and then
Luca on the road without his newborn baby to pause. No diapers, no crying, midnight feedings.
You know, after Luca's 21st birthday party, he sat out the next game with a sprained left thumb that I don't believe ever appeared on the injury report again.
Well, then Dallas has Detroit, Chicago, Golden State, Oklahoma City, Denver. So this is going to be a pretty big 10 games for them to see how they handle
every like we just... Yeah, every stretch of games, the rest of the West.
Yes, I understand that. It's a particularly difficult 10 games. And, you know, let's see where they're at in a couple of weeks when it's over.
So, McMahon, I watched Dallas play the Suns last Thursday. Mm-hmm. And I watched them play the majority of the game on Tuesday night. Kyrie and Luka, this 30 and 45, okay, that's not going to happen maybe every night.
It happens. It's not like a total outlier. This is not like a shocking development.
Yeah. I walk away from this game kind of feeling better about where Dallas is than I do where Cleveland is, to be honest with you.
Look, they're going to be as long as those two are healthy, they're going to be a damn good offensive team. That might be the best offensive duo in the league. If not, it's very high on that list. I mean, Luka is leading the league in scoring efficiently, and this was his 12th 40-point game of the season. You know,
almost as many as Tex. We have more 40-point games or more Tex by the end of the season.
People might think I'm being sarcastic here, but I'm not. Dante Exum might play in Toronto. He's been out for a while. If he doesn't play in Toronto, he's on the verge of coming back. Now, obviously, there might be some rust to chip off or whatever. I'm telling you, Dante Exum could be a key factor. And he was before he went out. He had earned, he moved in the starting lineup when Kyrie was out for a while. He was going to stay in there and be bumped to the three. Then he ends up getting hurt. Dante Exum is their best 3-and-D guy. He's their best combination of on-ball defense and the ability to hit spot up threes with a little bit of playmaking. I don't know exactly what his role is going to be. I don't think Jason Kidd knows exactly what his role is going to be. They're kind of figuring out how all these pieces fit together. But, you know, I think Dante Exum could be a major X factor for this team going down the stretch of the season and, you know, perhaps into the playoffs.
All right. Now, the Cavs, The Cavs had won 9 games in a row right before the All-Star break. They split their last 2 games in an unimpressive fashion, lost their first 2 games out of the break in unimpressive fashion. Donovan Mitchell missed those first 2 games with an illness, but they have been sliding a little bit recently.
And he came back and they won in very unimpressive fashion in Washington on Sunday with Donovan.
Where did he pick up that illness? Cabo?
I don't think he was in Cabo, but I don't know. I think he was on the
West Coast. In Cabo.
I think it was on the West Coast.
But he wasn't in Cabo.
Anyway, the thing with the Cavs is they've got this conundrum about their putting their 5 best players on the court and it actually leading to their best basketball. Talked about this earlier, about how they really thrived about with spreading the floor and only playing with one big man, one true big man, while Evan Mobley was out for 6 weeks and replacing Darius Garland, who's having the worst 3-point shooting season of his career, with guys who shot 3-pointers very, very effectively. And the Cavs offense went from like 25th to like 3rd in that stretch. And so they've been dealing with the elephant in the room, which is that when they put all their guys out there, they're not that good. I shouldn't say they're not that good because I'll get fiery anger. They're not as good as they were before. And so
the fit is clunky.
Tonight, Evan Mobley.
Yeah, here's the numbers. Their net rating's plus 1.7 with their starting 5 on the floor, which is it's not bad, but it's not awesome.
It's not
as good as they are when they split the bigs.
They were plus 9, I think, while those guys were out. Now, tonight, Evan Mobley, he didn't play poorly. He had 12 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. And I want to be extraordinarily clear before I say this, that this is not a commentary on Evan Mobley, the player.
Well, here we go.
It's a commentary on Evan Mobley, the power forward.
And the fit.
He's a non-shooting center
who plays power forward a lot.
Okay. Tonight, Evan Mobley had a negative plus minus. He has been back for 13 games, okay, from his knee injury. The Cavs have won 10 of those games. They are 10-3 with him in the lineup since he came back. Of those 13 games, he has had a negative plus minus in 8 of them, and he had a 0 plus minus in 1. He's had a positive plus minus in 4 of 13 games. Now, I'm not saying that tonight, it's in and of itself, was indicative of, you know, because it's not a commentary on his play in this particular game, but he has not had a positive plus minus, I believe, in 6 games.
Well, what was a commentary on his performance today and on the Cavs' performance today was in the closing minutes of the game, Max Strus was matched up with PJ Washington, a power forward who couldn't really guard him because the Cavs went very small. And for the final basically 7 minutes of the game, they had Caris LeVert, Max Strus, and the 2 guards out there with Jared Allen. And Evan Mobley was on the bench until about 26 seconds left. And when Max Strus got going in that stretch late in the game, it was because they couldn't really, the Dallas had 2 bigs out there and couldn't really keep up. And the floor being spaced, having Max be able to take advantage of that matchup was a significant part.
Are you counting Washington as a big?
He's not a wing.
Yes, he is. He's a wing.
Okay. He's not a wing. Second of all, he can't guard Max Strus,
wasn't. Luka was guarding Max Strus and then Hardaway, and neither one of those guys did either.
They were scrambling,
Washington
trying to keep up with
the game at power forward, and he started the game, and so did Evan Mobley. I mean, whatever you want to say.
Power forward, unless you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, power forward is a wing position in today's NBA.
Well, then this is the point.
I would say PJ Washington is a 4/5, not smaller. But no, this is not
Dallas,
worth the
he's
argument.
A 4, he's a 4/3.
Well, yes, the Mavericks have 17 centers on their team. The point is the Cavs had 4 guards out there with a center to space the floor.
Yep.
And Dallas was scrambling to try to guard them.
Okay. So here's the other thing. And I will take incoming because I go on Cleveland radio and say some of these same things. I take incoming on this. Evan Mobley was on a minute restriction for 3 weeks when he came back from the knee surgery, and rightly so. And so JB Bickerstaff kind of managed the minute restriction by making sure he ran out of minutes midway through the fourth quarter. And, you know, no one ever said anything about it, but it was kind of like, well, Evan's out. He's hit his 28
minutes.
He kept
magically coming out with 7 minutes to go in the game, and Jared Allen would finish the game. like even
I think
today.
That's called a happy coincidence.
So yes, Evan Mobley's exactly what it is. Evan Mobley's minute restriction has ended after the All-Star break, and he's still playing the exact same amount of minutes. Now, when I said the way I said this on radio today in Cleveland was that we know that JB Bickerstaff knows there's a problem because he's not increasing Evan Mobley's minutes. And I was told, even though his minute restriction was lifted, that they are still being very cautious on his minutes because they played 3 games in 4 nights. Okay. Tonight he played 28 minutes. So, and it's not just him. There's also some issues with Garland, because when Donovan Mitchell plays, he's basically been the point guard for most of the season. He's averaging the most assists in his career. So when Donovan's playing point guard, Garland has to kind of be a floor spacer, because they were playing, you know, Sam Merrill, who was like practically leading the NBA in 3-point shooting, as getting a lot of the minutes. And Garland is not a floor spacer.
Yeah, he's a point guard.
He's a ball handler.
They got two guys trying to do the same thing at the guard spot, and they got two guys trying to do the same thing at the big spot. That's the problem. There's just a lot of overlap. They're all good players.
I'm going to take – the heat is going to be on for me talking about this after this huge Cavs win.
Well, I hope some aggregators really add to it.
So anyway
– look, for everybody in Cleveland who wants the team to be a championship-level team, like, this is the thing that has to get solved if the Cavs want to be in the conference finals or in the finals or competing for a title. Like, they have to figure out how to make this whole mix work with these four guys. This is the existential question there. And you, again, the key part of the game, Evan Mobley was watching on the bench. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty significant thing.
And it was
as we're moving forward.
And that alignment helped them win the game.
Yeah.
Again, not because Evan Mobley stinks, but because it doesn't fit.
This is 2024.
Right. Okay. So
the Cavs would be one of the favorites in 1998 for sure. And they still are a good team.
2008.
Yeah, and they still are a good team. But it's just that style of play is very difficult in today's NBA.
So
and
the Cavs,
it's tough to have two non-shooters on the floor regardless in today's NBA.
And Evan Mobley, like we've talked about a bunch, is a talented player who has not really progressed as an offensive player. And the lack of an outside shot is causing a lot of problems. And you look at what Scottie Barnes and Chet Holmgren have done, two guys who are in the same age range as him. Those guys are legitimate threats from three, and it's changed the way teams have to guard them. And Evan hasn't yet. Doesn't mean he can't, but he hasn't yet.
And I'll also say that, because I'm big bag national media, most of the Cavs starters were in negative plus minus tonight, including
for a lot of the game. For a lot of the game, Mitchell and Allen had worse plus minuses than.
But the reason is because their starting lineup doesn't function well as a group.
Hey,
okay,
what was the minivan's plus minus?
The bench destroyed the Mavericks bench tonight.
We're all about the minivan on this pod.
I'll just say this: so the Cavs have had during this stretch where they've been very, very good. I think they're something like 20-4 in their last 24, something like that. They've had a very favorable schedule. I'll just point out that out of those 20 wins, 4 of them came against the Wizards. Okay. And they play the Bulls, who just lost to the Pistons.
Hey, what's wrong with the Wizards? Kyle Kuzma thought they were in better shape than the Mavericks.
Yeah. The Wizards are actually the worst team in the NBA right now. They're
news
tied.
Flash.
Yeah. They're tied with Detroit, but Detroit is playing a lot better. So the Cavs play the Bulls on Wednesday, the day this pod comes out, and then they play the Pistons on Friday. And then their schedule takes a major, major turn. Sunday, they play the Knicks. Now, I don't know who is going to be able to be available for that game for the Knicks. The Knicks are battling through, but whenever they play the Knicks, it's a big challenge because of what happened in the playoffs last year. Tuesday, I think Bontemps is going to Cleveland because the Celtics are coming to Cleveland. So they play the Knicks and
we'll
the Celtics.
See. I may be there. Maybe I won't be there after the spot. Maybe I'll have to hide.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't he like most wanted in Cleveland?
I might be up there after some of the things I said about the proud.
Yes.
The
you
proud
were so mean. You were so mean about the Cavs. So
Rubber
mean.
Ducks ain't giving Bontemps a bobblehead. I know that.
No, nobody gives me a bobblehead.
So Knicks, Celtics, then the week after that, they play three of the better Western Conference teams all in a row. Or I guess they play the Nets in there, but Timberwolves, Suns, Pelicans. So.
Hey, the Nets just had a 1-game winning streak.
Quickly ended.
The Nets have two big games.
Convincingly.
The Nets have two big games with the Hawks this week to fight for the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, stop.
Big games. Big games for the play-in.
If the Hawks win those two games.
Big games for the Rockets lottery odds.
Listen, if the Hawks win those two games, especially with Trae Young now being out, I mean, they'll be up 6 in the loss column with like 22 games to go. The thing will be over for sure at that point. But they lose them both, then it's two, and then they got a shot.
I'm just saying, you know, the Cavs are, you know, 3-3 in the last six games, and they have some real tough games in the next 10 days. So maybe they get it ironed out. Like, you know, Darius Garland is a former All-Star. I mean, the guy has the ability to put up enormous numbers. They were the number seven offense last year playing with this starting lineup minus Max Strus. It's not like it's impossible for it to happen. Mobley's three-point shooting has been improving. It doesn't really matter because they don't guard him. What you need is for them to be guarded out there. That opens the lane for Donovan Mitchell to go to work.
It also, yeah, to same, be fair, it also, to be clear, hasn't really been improving. He had one game where he hit, I think, three threes.
And no, he had a stretch there. He did. He had a stretch.
He had two games where he hit shots, and he basically
has like five or
shots.
Six games.
Okay.
He's defending because he's tall, Von Temps.
Yes, I know. It's all about the heightism here on the pod.
So this was an interesting moment in addition to a fascinating game, an interesting moment for both these teams, because I'm not sure where the Cavs are going to go, and I'm pretty interested in where the Mavericks go after that.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Cavs got a little Bucks kind of zooming up behind them.
Yeah, I was saying last week that I really thought that the Bucks, I mean, it wasn't really a hot take, I don't think, but I thought that the Bucks were primed to, I thought they were showing some signs that they were going to improve, and they've had a couple of good wins since the All-Star break, including winning. Actually, right before the All-Star break, they won in Minnesota, which was a really good win.
No, right before the All-Star break, they farted.
Oh, that's
all
right.
The place
right after the All-Star break.
They opened the All-Star break beating Minnesota, and then they beat a very injured Philly team and a bad Charlotte team. But they did beat the bad Charlotte team by 1,000 points.
How dare you? Charlotte had been red hot.
Early, they did beat Denver, too. So they've had some nice wins lately.
Yeah.
And look, they beat the sizzling Charlotte Hornets. It's hard to beat the Hornets these days, and they did it by about 72 points.
Caught the Hornets at the end of that road trip.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, it's been a tough week for NBA officials, a tough season for NBA officials. Von Temps, you were there in the Garden on Monday night with the Knicks situation. They had a sort of interesting karmic turn because 2 weeks ago in Houston, you remember Jalen Brunson gets called for the foul at the end of the game on Jalen Green, was it?
No, Aaron Holiday.
Aaron Holiday, yeah. Regardless, it was a whoops pool report. Just like this one was a whoops pool report.
Yeah, no, at least in that instance, you could have said, if you were the officials, yeah, we messed this call up, but you also had the ability to challenge it had you not messed your challenge up earlier, which the Knicks did. But they still messed it up.
The key is that it had been very rare for the officials to admit a mistake in the pool report, you know, which is the interview that they give right after the game. Usually they, you know, it's, you know, they sort of give their name, rank, and serial number and say that the foul or whatever was called
only admit it if it's an egregious miss.
And we've had two egregious misses have directly impacted games in 2 weeks. Like I said, it wasn't a great showing tonight either. The other thing that we've been seeing this year is we've been seeing the loss of composure from referees just ejecting guys like out of nowhere. It's not been the greatest season for officiating. And you guys know that I am usually a staunch defender of officials.
It's been tough.
Enough with the too small.
It's been tough, Bontemps. And it's not something that's easily fixed, and it's not something that you can do about it. You just gotta be better, is a long story short.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're dealing with the human element here, right? And you're gonna have mistakes at times. And that is just part of the game in general. People are gonna miss shots, people are gonna miss calls. The call, the whole thing on Monday was brutal. I mean, it was a crazy sequence. We as a group put together the questions for the pool reporter. Brian Mahoney from the Associated Press did it with James Williams, who was the crew chief. And I thought there could have been a foul call on the play when Josh Hart knocked it away from Simone Fontecchio. They argued that there wasn't one. I'm not sure Josh Hart got fouled on the shot he made over Jalen Duren. They said that that was also a correct call. But James Williams, like I said, the post had one of the best shots ever of him literally just staring at this car crash in front of him and just watching it. My favorite part, if you go back and watch it, Jalen Brunson picks up the ball and looks like a kid who got some candy he wasn't supposed to. And he kind of like looked around, was like, oh, all right, we're good. And then went and ended up passing to Josh Hart to win the game. And
it's like in Halloween where you're checking, hey, do they have a ring cam? Because these are like full-size candy bars. And there's a bunch of them just
big full candy bars that we got in our hands. But listen.
Can I just call a quick timeout? That wasn't a story from McMahon's childhood. We didn't have ring cams when we were kids. That's a story from the last decade.
Hey,
which means that McMahon is not only trick-or-treating, but stealing.
I can relate to the immature little brats. That's all.
Listen, we know McMahon is a heightist, so he's probably taking the candy from the kids because they're too short, saying, hey, these kids can't have this candy.
Yeah, I just let the kids do the candy, and then I just rob them. I let them do the trick-or-treating, and I'm just coming in as a bully on those little fellas.
All right.
That sounds about right. So there's also some added backstory on this Pistons thing. So Saturday night, Pistons are playing Orlando. The last two-minute report claims Paolo Banchero did not travel on what was a game-winning shot. Paolo hits a nice shot over Jalen Duren. He pretty clearly looked like he traveled to me.
He hopped. He did a full-on hop in the middle of his...
The last two-minute report didn't say that was a travel.
They claimed it was a correct no-call, which, okay, fine. They lean towards saying they're right if it's a 50-50-ish call. I thought he traveled pretty clearly. The Pistons were angry about that. Monday's game, which was at the Garden, was originally supposed to be in Detroit. However, when the Knicks were in the in-season tournament, now we need to back way up. As the in-season tournament was playing out, the NBA made this big show of saying, well, listen, some teams are going to get an extra home game and some teams are going to get an extra road game. And that's just how it's going to be. And you'll just have to deal with it.
Right. And that's Indiana and Milwaukee end up playing five times. It just happens.
Just how it went. Well, the Knicks, because the Knicks lost on the road in the quarterfinals to the Bucks, there was some scheduling issue at the Garden. I can't remember what it was, but they had to play the Celtics on the road in the other game, the other makeup game. So because of that, they were down a road game or they were down a home game for the year. So the NBA just out of nowhere, a couple weeks later, just sends out this email and says, this Pistons game has been rescheduled, is being played at the Garden now, which is very clearly the NBA saying, this team stinks. Right. We're going to just take a home game from them and we'll give it to the Knicks because the Knicks are in the playoffs.
And we'll have a full house there.
Right.
Probably not so much in Detroit. Right.
Yeah.
Listen, if I know some of those New York media members, they weren't happy. They got screwed out of airline miles, Marriott points, and apparently like the best media pregame meal in the league.
The Knicks writers were not upset to not have to fly to Detroit. I can tell you that. However, this email comes out of nowhere a couple weeks after the tournament's over. It just says, announces, Knicks get an extra home game. And yes, the Pistons get the gate. I'm sure that's why the Pistons agreed, because they're sure they make more money off a Knicks game. Bottom line is, they have this call go against them on Saturday. They're down a home game that they should be playing anyway at home. And then this call happens after the game, a game where they outplayed the Knicks for large stretch of it. Quentin Grimes, who had been traded away, had a great fourth quarter.
He made what he thought was the winning basket. Quentin Grimes, who wanted to be out of New York, makes his driving layup that's going to be
fantastic
the hero basket.
Shot. Evan Fournier hit a ton of shots in the fourth quarter. Those two guys basically brought the Pistons back, had the game, seemed like they had it won, and then it gets yanked out from underneath them at the last second on this call. And again, I will give James Williams some credit for admitting he got it wrong as the crew chief when he was staring at it. And
yeah, he could have let it just show up in the last 2 minute report.
I mean, admitting you had it wrong, that's like when Wendy voted Joker as MVP after lobbying the whole time for Embiid. Like, it's at some point, the act.
I was saying that Embiid shouldn't have been disqualified because he had a sprained ankle.
My point is, if you're wrong, and then admit it at the end, you don't get credit.
I'm just saying, I'm giving a slight modicum of give back on that, as opposed to claiming, for example, that Asar Thompson didn't have control of the ball and therefore it wasn't a foul, which is like, oh, sure, that could have been attempted to be done. That would have been insane.
Even if he didn't have control of the ball, are you allowed to form tackle a guy who doesn't have the ball?
That was literally what someone said to me.
It's a loose ball foul at worst, yes, right?
It is, right. It's obviously a loose ball foul. But look, the bottom line is the NBA has been dealing for years now with a talent drain from its veteran officials for a variety of reasons, injury, COVID, retirement, et cetera. And as a result, we've seen pretty hefty lop the top of the talent pool lopped off in the past several years. And ironically, these calls have been being messed Twitter. Up. What's that?
They lost an official to Twitter.
Oh, well, yes. Eric Lewis. Yes.
Who was one of the best officials in the league, by the way.
An excellent official. Right. They've lost, you know, Ken Maurer is part of this COVID lawsuit. He was one of the best officials in the league. He's left. Monty McCutcheon's out running the officials. He left reffing. Duke Callahan and Danny Crawford retired. There's been a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So these guys have all left. They have to replace them. The irony is these mistakes that have been made in recent games have been made by guys who've been doing it for a while.
That's
James
correct.
Williams certainly been doing it for a while. Jason Goble obviously is famous for missing the call against the Lakers last year, which then seemed
Jason
to cost
Goble
the Lakers to get every call
the guy
for the next
who,
6 months.
Jason but, Goble was the guy who made the call on Brunson in Houston and also the guy who made the call or non-call in Boston
non-call
last
on LeBron.
Year when LeBron went to the basket where yes. Pat Bev got the camera.
But the point is, this is...
He wasn't the one who Pat Bev showed the camera, though. I forgot which...
That was Eric Lewis.
That was Eric. Yes, that's right. That was Eric Lewis, yes. So that's a long-winded way of saying... As we get closer to the playoffs, this is going to be a topic that continues to come up, and it's going to be something to monitor because as the pressure on these games ramps up, the players it ramps up, and for the officials it ramps up. And as we know, like we saw today, like that was a pretty intense game, that Cavs-Mavs game, and it got pretty funky at the end.
It was just like, what the hell is going on?
Yes. And that was what happened in the final 30 seconds of the game at the Garden, which the Pistons are not a good team, but that was an intense game. Pistons are desperately trying to get some wins. They're playing better lately. Had a great win tonight on the second night of a back-to-back in Chicago.
You want to know why it was a great win? Because it was their ninth win, which I know we're still in February, but they had lost 28 in a row at one point.
Well, and they deserve credit because, I mean, look, they added a couple guys. Like, Grimes is back. He's a good player. He's playing well. But, like, they have been playing a lot better recently. Kate Cunningham has been awesome. They, like I said, they played a great game against Orlando. They outplayed the Knicks on Monday. Knicks have been a mess for a while with all these injuries. They got to get healthy. But they deserve to win the game Monday. That was a really impressive win to come back and win.
Nine wins is the fewest wins in a full NBA season. The Bobcats, the Charlotte Bobcats, had less than that in a lockout shortened season. I think they had six. But
seven. Trust me, there
was
were
it
counting.
Seven. Okay,
7-59.
Well, the record that is recognized is the 72-73 Philly 76ers who went 9-73. So the Pistons have now gotten out of that zone. I'll give them one more win between now. I don't know if I'm giving the Wizards one more win. The Wizards also have nine wins, but we will not see a new record at least for that, considering they set the record for 28 consecutive losses. I'm not saying they were breaking open any champagne after this one, but sure that getting that ninth win.
I'm sure they felt good bouncing back and winning today after yesterday.
They're gonna. If Washington doesn't win another game the rest of the year, they've got to change their nickname to the Lizards because you can't have a W at the beginning if you only have nine of them all year. We can get like iguanas, geckos, whatever for the mascot.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket, with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
All right. Bontemps, you had a story that came out with Kevin Pelton on Tuesday about the offensive explosion in the NBA this year and what the NBA is thinks about it. And this is something that routinely when I run into people out in the world, ran to a couple of gentlemen in Las Vegas over the weekend where I was.
Couple gentlemen.
Yeah, what are these like? Shady gambler types or what? I mean, what's going on here?
That's for me to know. You know, who recognize me and like, you know, this is why I often hear this from people who are not really NBA fans. They'll complain about traveling. And I have an answer for traveling. And I always say this to people from Europe, the Europeans that I deal with when I do the cover Team USA and I'm, you know, dealing with all kinds of Europeans who talk about how the NBA game is, you know, crap compared to the pure game that they play in Europe, which is they do play a pure game in Europe. And I say, yeah, I agree that it's a more fundamentally sound game that you play in Europe and next to nobody watches it. They like when people maybe get an extra half step and throw down a dunk or whatever, and they want people to watch the game. I understand you don't want that in game 7 of the NBA Finals, but let's just keep our eye on the ball. The other thing I hear about recently is there's no defense play in the NBA. You know, I mean, they've been saying that for years, but now they're like, you know, every game's 146 to 142. Well, that is kind of an interesting and more fair criticism. And Bontemps, you talked to Joe Dumars and some other people in the league about it, you and Kevin Pelton. And what did you learn?
Well, I think the most immediate thing I learned was that the NBA's competition committee is officially studying whether to make any changes to the rules to potentially give defenses more of a fair shake, which was sort of the news peg of the story. That is actually potentially going to be on the table, I would assume, this summer once they spend a few months looking at it. But look, I mean, it's a combination of a few things. We just talked earlier about the Cavs and Evan Mobley, right? And 20 years ago, Evan Mobley not shooting threes wouldn't have been a problem at all because as Mike Brown, right, the coach of the Cavs 10 years ago, well, Mike Brown was coaching the Cavs and started 2005, as you know. And he, when I talked to him for the story, he was like, look, when I started coaching, there was maybe a guy on each team and probably not even that you really worried about shooting the ball from three. Now you're worried about every guy basically on every team shooting the ball from three.
Now, when centers come into the league on the scouting report, it's noted as a flaw if they can't shoot the three.
Right.
20 years ago, Dirk was revolutionizing the game because he was a power forward who could shoot the three.
He was shooting 20 footers. He wasn't even shooting the three. Did shoot threes, but he was, you know, the classic Dirk shot was from the nail.
But the term like stretch four was a thing because it was unique.
Right.
Now, if you're not a stretch four, you're called a bench warmer.
Right. When Chris Bosh started shooting threes with the Heat to space the floor for LeBron and Dwayne Wade, it was this mind-blowing revolutionary thing. You know,
now you've got stretch rim protectors. Like Chet Holmgren has 150 blocks and 100 threes.
Right.
And we've got plenty of season left to play.
We've talked about that from the beginning. That's why that's been such a big deal, right? Having him space the floor at center gives Shai Gilgeous-Alexander all these avenues to cut into the lane, all this extra space for him and Jalen Williams, these guys to operate. Like that's we spent so much of the year talking about why that's been crucial to their success.
And speaking of Mike Brown, like occasionally, if you ever want to watch, or you can just go onto YouTube and look at it. Mike Brown was the coach for LeBron when he had that famous game in Detroit in 2007. Where he scored 29 of 30 points.
48 special.
I am sorry to say this. It's almost unwatchable. Not the LeBron plays, but like if you watch the game, it's an awful,
dude, when
awful
you watch,
game.
When you watch old basketball, even like the Showtime Lakers, who were like this ridiculously entertaining team, their half court is hard to watch.
Guys, one guy dribbling the ball with one guy guarding him and four guys standing around near the paint.
Guys are spotting up at 16 feet. It's insane to watch now. You're just like, dude, back up.
It's another sport.
Like, okay, study's the thing. Here's the deal, though. I don't want to go back to mud wrestling basketball.
Just to cut you off for a second. Nobody is arguing that we're going to go back to 2004 when it was 65-60 in conference finals games between the Pacers and the Pistons.
Okay. I don't want just to be able for a big guy just to plant his butt in the middle of the lane and just be able to clog things up. You know, I don't want hand checking. I'm sorry. It is fun to watch the most skilled era ever in the NBA. I don't think a lot of scoring is a problem. And there are still good defensive games. There are still, I promise you, in the playoffs, we're going to see some 102-100 type of games. They're going to be great basketball games. But the simple fact of the matter is the number one reason that scoring is through the roof is because the players are more skilled than ever. And because you're having to guard guys 30 feet from the hoop, where that would have, like, that wasn't even a figment of anybody's imagination 15 years ago.
Well, yes, that is 100% true. And to be clear, again, just for people who haven't read the story yet or are not going to read the story, the NBA makes any changes to the rules. The goal is not for anybody involved, from people who think, like Drew Holiday, who I'll get to in a second, who thinks that you should be able to play more defense, to Joe Dumars or anybody else. Literally everybody said, we're not going back to 20 years ago. I think the question is, has the game, like then it was horrible to watch. They instituted a bunch of rule changes to make more offense come into the game. More offense came into the game. Teams got smarter. Teams now are much more judicious in where they get their shots from. Daryl Morey deserves a lot of credit for that, for the way he and James Harden, really, and Mike D'Antoni helped revolutionize the way teams really look at the court and study where to get shots from and get the most efficient shots in the most efficient ways.
Eric Spoelstra, too.
Yeah, Eric Spoelstra, all these guys. Steve Kerr with the Warrior, all these guys. Like, all these coaches have done a great job of finding ways to manipulate defenses and create more space, more shooting everywhere on the court. Like Tim said, now instead of, like, 10 years ago, Ryan Anderson was a revolutionary guy as a stretch four. Kevin Love was a revolutionary guy as a stretch four. Now it's Chet Holmgren 10 years later as a stretch five. Nikola Jokic is a stretch five. Joel Embiid is, whether you want to call him a stretch five or not, a guy who can easily hit open threes. Like, those are the guys that are really bending defenses. Carl Towns, obviously. We can't forget him. I don't even know Tim's moniker for him, but...
Big Spamo. Self-proclaimed greatest shooting big man of all time, baby.
There you go. I set you up for it. But I do think so it's not like if over there is zero and now we're at 100, I think the goal would be to get it to like 85 or 90 and move it back a little bit the other way. And I think where the interesting thing you said there is referring to the playoffs. And when I asked a bunch of people about this, not surprisingly, Drew Holiday, one of the most physical defenders in the league, one of the best defenders in the league, when I said to him, hey, you think that there's a balance between offense and defense? He immediately said no and started laughing. And I said, I thought you might say that. And we talked about it for a while. And then I said, hey, if you could change something, what would you change? And he immediately said, without thinking, call every game like a playoff game. Because that's when the games are the best. And that's when people watch the most. And that's when the competition's the best. Now, to me, the inference there is, and I mean, he just said it to me after we talked about it for a while. As we all know, in the playoffs, you're able to be more physical as a defender and get away with it than in the regular season.
Hey, that's what James Williams was doing.
That's right. Yeah, James Williams is revving like a playoff game. But I do think, like, for example, Jason Tatum and Giannis Antetokounmpo are big physical guys who are obviously very skilled, right? Both of those guys like to get in the lane and use their off arm to shove off the defender and create space and then score. They almost never get called for a foul on that. But
Luka's a master of that too. Luka's 250-ish pounds and
James Harden,
just a bull.
Yep, James Harden, another guy, right? Those guys are all
ballet feet, but a bull.
Right. So those guys are all able to use their bodies to and arms to create space and be physical and get room to score. But if a defender does the same thing to those guys, they're almost always going to get called for a foul. And so I think if anything changes from my conversations with Joe Dumars to talking to Drew to talking to all these other people, I think like we've seen the NBA take away some of James Harden's various tricks over the years and the rip through move and stuff like that. I think all that really might change here is just maybe letting defenders be a little more physical, maybe preventing some of these offensive players from having quite the same ability to create these advantages, just to try to balance the playing field out a little bit so it's not so shifted towards the offense. But we're not going to be in a world where it's going to be 95 to 90 even again. I mean, the games are going to be 125, 120 almost, no matter what is done, because there's so many threes shot. And to your point, McMahon, there's so many skilled players now. Like Mike Brown said it perfectly. It's like there's really not a way to put the cat in the back in the bag with this stuff. A lot of it's just the way the game is now.
Yeah, and it was good that they got rid of some of the ridiculous free throw hunting, you know, the non-basketball played free throw hunting, because nobody wants to see that. But people want to see the great skill. People want to see, you know, the wide open floor and these guys create, and, you know, the these guys who can shoot it from, you know, 25, 28, 30 feet.
59.
Yes. Right. Be able to do that. Honestly, I've got something I want the competition committee to change, and it would benefit offenses.
Ooh.
But like when there's a lob, the act of shooting starts when the guy leaves the floor, not when he catches the ball. The act of shooting, if you're catching an alley-oop, starts when you leave the floor. If a guy is fouled in the air while going to catch a lob, that's a shooting foul.
I do like that. I do like that rule change. I do think that's a good idea.
Because it's one of the most exciting plays in the game, and like it should
also
not
a dangerous
be a good
play if you end up undercutting a guy too.
Right, it should not be a good strategy to be able to just hack guy before he catches the ball, knowing that it's going to be instead of 2 points, it's going to be a ball out of bounds. Like again, that's a rule that would benefit offenses, but it would benefit the viewing experience of watching the NBA game.
Well,
so more points, damn it.
When they say that they're studying it, it's code. The competition committee is studying it. It's code for they're going to make changes.
On this one,
we can't have a bad boy. We can't have Joe Dumars in charge of this crap because they were. I mean, come on, dude, that was hideous basketball.
But
hideous basketball.
I don't.
What's Magic doing? He ain't busy. Let's get Magic involved here.
The 04
Pistons. Let him tweet through it.
The 04 Pistons were pretty close to the 89-90 Pistons, too. But look, I don't, like I said, I'm not 100% sure they're going to change anything. But I do, I do ultimately think if it is anything changed, it's more of a discussion with the referees to allow a little bit more physicality. Not a lot, not like tackling guys again, but allowing a little bit more of that. So these perimeter players have some sort of a chance at guarding these elite offensive players, because otherwise, like, again, these guys are so good and so skilled. And especially now with Tatum and Luka and like Jan, I mean, these guys are also huge, that if they have the ability to use their bodies and size in ways that the defenders can't, there's just almost no way to guard.
And they should outlaw Giannis's spin move. It would bring scoring down instantaneously. Everybody knows he's going to do it, and it works 8 times a game. It's wild.
Pretty good.
I think it's just because he's such a freight train. What are you going to do?
You take that charge.
I know. You're loading up and thinking, my God, please help me. And then all of a sudden he does the loop-de-loop.
Listen,
and he's
Giannis goes into that spin move, I'm like the Brooklyn Nets. I ain't taking that charge.
But that is you make a good point, McMahon, about watching the old games. Cause I even got asked I did a radio ESPN radio hit earlier, and somebody, one of the hosts was like, oh, so these guys are just not playing defense now. Right. Isn't that the deal? And I brought that up. Like, if you don't think NBA teams are really playing defense, watch a quarter of an NBA game today, any two teams, and then go watch the Showtime Lakers and the Celtics play in the finals in the '80s. And the guys on most of the guys on the court aren't moving 80% of the time.
Well, and just the spacing, the how much more ground do you have to cover? Some of these guys spot up at 26, 27 feet and are legit right. threats there.
Listen,
as opposed
to
16 feet where like you can cover your man and help and not have to move very far.
Yes. We're also just not moving. It'd be one guy dribbling, one guy guarding him, and eight guys watching most of the time.
Come to an NBA game when they open the gates. You know, come really early and watch the guys who aren't even playing go through their pregame warmups.
Yeah.
And them shoot like 80% on their three-pointers that they're practicing. Much less what you see in actual when the starting guys come out there and warm up.
Well, and the ball handling ability, like we talk about the shooting and the spacing.
Yeah.
But dude, like again, the power forward position to me, just look at how much the power forward position has changed to now. Like you've got these guys that are shooters that can put it on the floor, that can pass. I mean, the skill of the average NBA player, much less a superstar, the skill of these guys has just improved so much over the last even 10 or 15 years.
Go back and go on YouTube and watch some of that. Not just the LeBron baskets. Watch the 2007, not 1997, not 2004, 2007. And that's LeBron. Like that's LeBron. Not even in like, you know, he was in a max contract by then. This wasn't his rookie year. And tell me if that's...
That was the last year of his rookie deal, right?
What's the last year's rookie deal?
Right.
Well, all I'll say is because it was the first time he'd ever pulled something like that off in the playoffs, it's on the Pantheon wall for his performances. By LeBron's standards, it's not anywhere near one of his most impressive playoff performances. Because he hadn't done it before and he had to prove it, you know, that's there. But when it actually comes to the feats on the court, no. And that just sells, you know, LeBron bridges all the eras, you know, and you know, to watch how he plays different now, forget about the rest of the game. So something tells me no matter what the rule changes is, LeBron will be fine with it. He'll figure out a way to handle it. All right. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to Bontemps and McMahon. Thank you for listening to us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.